This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 209.
Today's episode is brought to you by Whoop, a scientifically grounded system designed to help athletes get the best out of their bodies and optimize performance. Athletes tend to overtrain, undertrain, misinterpret fitness peaks, and often don't really understand the importance of sleep and recovery. Visit whoop.com to learn more and use the promo code MTA for $50 off your purchase. That's whoop.com and use code MTA to save $50.
This podcast is brought to you by Generation UCAN, the revolutionary new way for runners to fuel. UCAN keeps your blood sugar stable and allows your body to burn fat. Generation UCAN, there's sugar and then there's science. To get 15% off your order, just visit generationucan.com and use the code MTARECOVER. That's generationucan.com and use the code MTARECOVER. Welcome to the Marathon Training Academy podcast, where it's all about empowering you to run a marathon and change your life. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
This episode is dedicated to helping you recover like a boss. Angie explains why recovery is important and the intentional things to do after workouts, long runs, and races. And in the quick tip segment, we answer a listener question about how to pace oneself for the first marathon. And to get expert help in reaching your long-distance running goals, you can learn about Academy membership when you visit marathontrainingacademy.com. Well, the year is going by fast. We're already at the end of March at the time of this recording. I signed up for the Go St. Louis Half Marathon, which is going to be in about a week. And, of course, I'm also building up toward the Flying Pig Marathon in Cincinnati, which I've heard wonderful things about. So,
and I think for the first time in a very long time, you have more races on the schedule than I do and actually have been training more as far as running more than I have. So that's something different. I actually made the tough decision this week to withdraw from the Mount Charleston Marathon in Las Vegas. That was going to be the end of April. It was just one of those things that my training wasn't coming along like I wanted, and the thought of traveling out there and running the race just made me feel exhausted. Mm-hmm. You know, and you shouldn't go into a race feeling anything less than excited, I guess.
Yeah.
And so I figured I shouldn't feel pressured or forced to do this marathon if I don't really feel like I'm ready and I want to do it. So I'm, you know, giving myself more recovery time, which is obviously what this episode is about, and just trying to listen to my body so that I can be as strong and healthy as possible.
Well, that is smart. I mean, you've done a ton of marathons and ultras, and you've been kicking butt for years and years, and you know, it's wise just to rest sometimes and feel like, you know, you gotta let your body tell you what it needs to do and what it wants to do next. I've had to skip a couple of marathons. Well, at least one full marathon that I had an Achilles issue come up that I just decided not to go do, which really sucks because you don't get the money back. But at least you don't make things worse.
Exactly. Maybe it would have been an easier decision mentally if I had an injury, because then clearly I don't want to hurt myself more. But I guess there's other metrics just besides injury that you need to listen to. And, you know, as a type A personality, I tend to have pushed myself really hard in the past. And so I just, you know, have had to push back against that part of my nature, maybe, and realize that I don't have to constantly be taking on big challenges to be happy and to be making progress in my life. You know, and I know after doing so many marathons that I could go out there and finish it. That's not the issue.
Yeah.
But the issue is more about, you know, my lack of excitement about the race. Not because it's not going to be a great race, I'm sure, but also not wanting to set myself back as far as my energy levels go.
So what have you been working on lately?
I've been focusing on easy runs and yoga 2 to 3 times a week. And I've also been doing some weight training, building up my back squat, my weight for that, and some different metrics that I've been tracking. So yeah, I'm trying to change it up a little bit and, you know, have fun with challenging myself in other fitness areas. And I know that when I'm ready to do another marathon, you know, hopefully later this year, that, you know, it'll be a really good thing for me.
Well, this episode's all about recovery, which is so important for long distance runners. But before we get into that, we'd like to say congrats to some folks in our community who are doing great things, and it's always fun to watch and see their progress. And so just some props here we want to give out.
That's right. This note came from Facebook. It comes from Abby. She says, I just wanted to say thank you so much for your podcast. I'm in my freshman year of college, and after running 3 half marathons last year, I decided to sign up for the Quintilles Wrightsville Beach Marathon. I completed this marathon in 4 hours and 2 minutes, and I loved every minute of it. Your podcast helped get me through countless long runs, and I learned so much about running and about myself from it.
Well, congrats, Abby, on completing your first marathon as a freshman college student. That's awesome. And 4:02 is a great finishing time for your first marathon, let me tell you.
And this next note comes from my coaching client, Pat. He actually also ran the same marathon as Abby. He says, I ran the Quintilles Wrightsville Beach Marathon today in North Carolina. It was a wonderful event, but a very tough race for me, especially the last 10 miles. I didn't BQ like I hoped to, but somehow gutted it out and finished first in my age group. And that would be for the 60-plus male division. He says, my trophy was a cool 64-ounce beer growler.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks, Coach Angie, and all of you for your support, prayers, and MTA goodness.
Well, congrats, Pat, on the first place age group finish. It didn't say his finish time, but it's also down like around 4 hours, right?
Yes, he finished just over 4 hours.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, he definitely ran a very solid race, even though he struggled a bit in the last few miles.
Well, you never know what a marathon is going to throw at you.
That is true. This next note comes from Allison in the Academy. She says, I'm on a running high after 2 awesome half marathons 7 days apart. The first was in Cambridge, UK, which was incredibly wet and cold, but I managed a 2-minute personal best coming in at 1 hour and 52 minutes. My goal was to break 1:50, and 7 days later, I managed this at the Silverstone half marathon with a time of 1:45:36. Silverstone was my first half marathon last year, and I knocked off 13 minutes 12 months later. What was more special was that last year, my brother and his girlfriend vowed to start running and both completed Silverstone. And now my brother runs the London Marathon next month. Thanks, MTA. Couldn't have done it without you.
Well, that's just too many positive things going on for one person.
No, that's not possible.
It is an avalanche of amazing things that are happening. Congrats, Allison, on the 2 half marathons, the personal record. And it's so neat to hear about getting family also involved in running.
Yeah, that really is inspiring.
Running spreads like a plague.
The best kind of plague to spread.
A plague of health and vitality. Okay, and we got one more note here, right, from Coach Chris.
Yes, he posted this in the Academy. He says, hello, everyone. I ran the Nanjing Mountain Marathon in China. It was quite a tough course and a pretty hot day. Well, a brutally tough course might be a better description. There was limited support during the marathon and about 3,500 overall feet of elevation change. So we were constantly going up and down, but I finished in 3 hours and 54 minutes and ended up taking 5th place overall out of about 350 people. Not a bad finish, and my finishing time was right where I was aiming for. I was exhausted, but extremely happy with the results.
So congrats, Chris, on running that hilly mountain marathon there in China. And if you want to learn more about our MTA coaches, we have a coaching page. Sometimes there is a waiting list. Sometimes there's a couple spots open. You just have to check it if you're interested in working with a coach one-on-one. And we have clients as old as 70 and as young as 17.
Quite the age range.
Yeah,
That's awesome.
No joke. And people from all over the world and with all kinds of goals, whether it's training for their first marathon, a BQ, first half marathon. So you can check that out over at marathontrainingacademy.com and look for the coaching page. And now we want to get into our feature segment of this episode. We're going to talk about recovery, and we want to really explain why it's so important and how you can be more intentional in the steps to take to recover like a boss. Well on my way, well on my way.
Yes, recovery is one of those terms that gets thrown around a lot, especially in the marathon and endurance fitness world. But sometimes the definition of it can be a bit vague. You know, you hear recovery this, recovery that. So recovery as a noun is defined as a return to a normal state of health, mind, or strength. Now, when you think of recovery as a verb, it delves more into the things that you can do to promote returning to that optimal state of health. So, you know, we say make sure you focus on recovery. You know, in one sense, it's returning to that normal state of health, but also it's the things that you do to get there. And obviously, neglecting recovery, you do it at your own peril. Eventually, it will catch up with you. So some of the questions that people think of when it comes to recovery include, does recovery equate a rest day? Or does everyone need the same amount of recovery? And what will happen in the absence of proper recovery? So those will, you know, those will be some things that we'll delve into today. Taking time to recover is absolutely essential if you want to get stronger and improve your fitness. During your speed work or long run or even a tough weight training session or cycling or swimming, whatever you're into, you're adding stress to your body systems, which results in depleting energy levels. It breaks down muscle tissue. It stresses your bones, your tendons, and ligaments. But the period post-workout or the recovery period is when the body starts repairing itself so that you can come back stronger during your next run or workout. After you work out, your body starts to repair or replace damaged muscle fibers through a cellular process. Muscle growth occurs when the rate of muscle protein creation is greater than the rate of muscle protein breakdown. And this muscle protein creation happens during the resting period, not during the actual workout. So a lot of people think, you know, you go in and you do a tough speed workout or you do a weight training session, you know, you're getting stronger then. Not necessarily. You know, you're breaking down muscle fibers so that it can be rebuilt back stronger.
And it happens while you sleep. And according to our last episode, our interview with the sleep expert, it happens during deep sleep.
Yes, exactly.
So it's important to optimize sleep. If you haven't heard that episode yet and like how to kind of hack and optimize your sleep, go back and hear that one because it's, I think it's very helpful.
Yes, sleep is one of my favorite recovery techniques.
That's one that you cannot ignore at all.
Like, that's one I ignore at my own peril, and everyone around me suffers the consequences if I don't get enough sleep. So basically, if you are doing the same workouts day after day without rest, your body isn't going to be able to keep up with the recovery process. And you may start to notice overall fatigue, that your legs maybe feel flat or heavy, that you aren't making gains in speed, strength, or endurance. And if this goes on long enough, it's a considered overtraining syndrome, which comes with a host of problems that you definitely don't want to have.
And we have read that overtraining is the number one cause of injury.
And burnout, definitely.
So what is it that drives people to not take time to recover? I mean, why are we constantly pushing and have this mindset that we got to do more and do more, lest we not make any gains?
Well, I think some of it comes down to simply not understanding the process of how your body gets stronger and faster. I think a lot of people tend to think that when they're out there pounding the pavement, you know, that's when they're really making gains. And so they think they have to do that day after day. And I also think we tend to live in a society where you can follow all these awesome people online, Instagram, yeah. You know, and they're posting pictures in these beautiful places and they're doing all these crazy races. And I found myself caught up in that, like, wow, I wish I could do that. Or I feel lazy because I'm not out there working out really hard today. Or I think it's easy to compare yourself to other people. And some of us just have that internal drive that really makes us want to push our own self to find our own limits. So, you know, I think there's probably a number of different factors that go into it. And it's important to remember, too, that when it comes to your need for recovery, there's not a one-size-fits-all formula. Each runner's need for recovery is going to be influenced by genetics, by age, gender, overall health, additional life stressors, nutrition, sleep. You know, there's a lot of things that go into it. So you shouldn't compare yourself to someone like Dean Karnazes or Mike Wardian and follow the same training or racing formula that they do. It's really not a weakness to admit that you need more recovery.
Yeah, Mike Wardian sleeps like 3 hours a night or something.
Yeah, and he's winning marathons every weekend.
Yeah.
You know, and it's awesome to kind of vicariously experience that through talking to him and following his adventures and stuff, but realize that's only going to be possible for a very small minority of the population of runners.
You know, I tend to look at people like that for inspiration. And a lot of times, because we've had Dean on the podcast several times, and he's never been injured, he says. Mike Wardian, of course, we just had. And these guys are smart, and they know that a lot of things that they do are not going to be typical. So they're really reluctant to just hand out advice.
Yes, right.
You know, they like to talk about mindset and people that inspire them and, you know, tell stories, which is where I draw a lot of inspiration from.
Yeah, I think that's wise because there are a few runners out there that I kind of call them the bulletproof runners. It seems like they can just do anything and do it well, and you know, they don't need as much downtime, and they just go. I've said multiple times in the podcast through the years that I consider myself to be an injury-prone runner. And, you know, I was thinking about that. Maybe it would be more accurate to state that I have a greater need for recovery than many people, because I really don't get injured a lot because I'm very careful.
Yeah.
Obviously, I've pushed my limits over the years and sometimes have not gotten the best results. You know, I did a year-long running streak, and I think that was really hard on my body. I probably would not do it again just because I don't feel like it really benefited my running that much. But it was an interesting experiment.
Well, not only did you run every day, but you did probably like 8 or 9 marathons and maybe even an ultra that year.
Yeah, it was a huge year for me. And, you know, I had a lot of fun, and it was really motivating to have that goal because I'm that kind of person who likes to check that box that I did something every day. But I really don't think in the overall picture of my health and my running that it was very beneficial. Now, for some people, they can do running streaks and, you know, just clicking out those miles day after day, and they do great. And, you know, I'm not discounting that at all, but I'm just saying that for a lot of us non-bulletproof runners, increased quantity of running does not equate higher quality runs and races.
Yeah.
So now with, you know, 44 marathons and 4 ultras under my belt, I've noticed that my body needs more recovery time.
So you would think as you get more experienced and more marathons under your belt that somehow you'd learn how to shortcut the recovery and, you know, be able to more easily do race after race after race, but you found the opposite.
Well, for some people, they can do that, and their bodies just seem to recover extremely quickly. But yeah, for me, I cannot shortcut the recovery period, and I have done that in the past, and, you know, in some ways it catches up to me. And I think, you know, for a lot of people who are in that stage where they feel really bulletproof right now, there is going to come a point in time as you get older, you know, maybe different life circumstances, that you will not be bulletproof anymore. And that always comes as a big letdown or shock to some people who've been able to just run high miles and not cross train or not really take, you know, the time for recovery like they should. And eventually, you know, your body lets you know that that's not going to happen anymore. So I think the key is, you know, I don't want to sound negative about, you know, doom and gloom warning people to be careful, but the key is to not see the need for recovery as some kind of weakness. Recovery is an essential part of being a strong and healthy runner for life and reaching your fitness goals. And the more you can listen to your body and tune into its needs, the better you'll be able to guard against things like overtraining and injury. So I like to look at it in more of a positive light.
Right. And do you think also that, you know, the reason why some people can push and go really hard, do a lot, and do that for years, but then later have to cut back is just because of changes that have to do with getting older, you know, hormones? Things are going to vary from person to person, probably.
Yeah, and exactly. Our bodies do not remain static. They're always changing. Our cells, all of our cells are turning over constantly. And so if you're not building in the recovery time that you need, eventually your body is going to say enough and there's going to be some kind of breakdown. So yeah, our bodies don't remain the same. The body we had 10 years ago is not the same body we had today. And the body we'll have in 10 years, for better or for worse, is not going to be the same as the one we're living in right now. So I think you have to see your body as in a constant state of growth and change. And hopefully, you know, using wisdom, you can take that change and growth in a positive direction, even as you combat things like the aging process.
So let's go ahead and get into some principles of recovery. And we'll start with the post-run period, since this is a running podcast. You folks know that though, right?
That's right. And some of these may seem like, duh, you know, this is so simple. And many people probably already do a lot of these things. So you're probably already partway into having effective recovery principles in place. But the first one would be the cool down period. After a run, it's important that you take time to properly cool down. That's why I tend to recommend that during the last 5 minutes of your run, you drop it to an easy pace to kind of let your heart rate start returning to normal, even walk for a few minutes after you're done running. The purpose of the cool down is to help your body return to pre-exercise conditions. This includes reducing your heart rate, your breathing rate, and normalizing core body temperature.
So it'd be good to maybe like walk half a mile after you're done.
Exactly. So the worst thing you can do is get done with a speed workout, whether you're at the track or you're on the treadmill, and then just immediately you're going like doing your 6 minute per mile pace or whatever your speed workout's at, then just getting in the car and sitting and driving for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
You've kind of gone from like 0 to 60. Like it's, your car needs kind of a warm up period and a cool down period. And so, you know, your body does as well. So I've, you know, unfortunately at times done this, like ran a marathon and then had to get in the car in the next 30 minutes and drive all day, you know, and I'm moving like an old woman by the end of the day, basically, just because these recovery principles either got eliminated or a major shortcut was taken.
You know, you're now that made me think the times that I felt the best after a marathon is when we walked a bunch afterwards. Remember in Berlin later that night, because we didn't have a car, of course. So we're walking all over the city and we went out to eat. And then I ran on a bike and I biked all over. And then the next day we took that long tour. We probably walked 10 miles. But it was really good for us.
I mean, yeah, we were moving around pretty well because we had that active recovery.
Yeah.
And after the race, you know, they kept you moving to get your medal, to get water, to get a finisher's blanket, to get your food. Often you'll see these races and they kind of shuttle you through. It seems like this long maze and you're just like, let me out of here. But there is a purpose to help you to cool down completely after your marathon.
I understand that. Sometimes it frustrates me, though. I remember the Chicago Marathon, you have, after you finish the marathon, you got to walk almost a mile to get to the post-race party area and the family meetup area. I was pretty annoyed by that. If they could just let me sit down for like 5 minutes somewhere after I cross the finish line, and then I'm good. But there's never anywhere to sit down, and they always want you to keep going. People are sitting down anyway, and then, of course, the...
Then they can't get up by themselves again.
Yeah. And then the course staff will come and tell you to, you know, kindly get up and keep moving, sir.
It's for your own good. That's all I can say.
So, yeah, cool down. And number two, stretching.
Yeah, another great thing to do in the cool down period is to stretch. Gently stretching your muscles while they're warm is another way that many runners stay injury-free and flexible. And there's also a growing body of research into the benefits of yoga, which I talk a lot about in the podcast. It's great for both recovery and injury prevention. Now, I do want to note, there is no need for a runner to have the flexibility of a gymnast, but many runners tend to have really tight hips and quads, which can lead to problems down the road. If you have a really tight area and you keep running or doing a repetitive motion with that issue, you're going to have problems probably lower down your kinetic chain. So doing a post-run stretching session of approximately 5 to 10 minutes, which can target your tight areas, can be very beneficial. You know, most of us, if we've been running for any length of time, know those areas of our body that tend to feel a little bit wonky or tighten up. Mm-hmm. So just hit those major muscle groups, do some gentle stretches. It's not like you're going to be bouncing in these stretches. We don't want to do ballistic stretching or anything, but just some gentle stretching while your muscles are warm in that cool down period can really help you move around easier the rest of the day.
So give us an example or two of some of the stretches that you do after a run.
I tend to do a lot of yoga type stretches, so they'd be more dynamic.
Like down dog.
So often, yeah, I'll get into down dog, and then sometimes I'll come into a cobra pose and then up dog, which stretches kind of the front of my body. And then I'll do a, like a low lunge. And
I like getting in a pigeon.
Pigeon's another great one, yes, for the hips and glutes. So, you know, and if you have tight calves, then just stand on the edge of a step and let your heels hang over the edge and just lengthen those calf muscles, let them release and stretch. And yeah, I mean, it doesn't take very much time, but if you make it part of your routine, your body's going to be a lot happier for it.
Very good. And the third way to be intentional about recovery is to pay attention to body temperature.
Yes. After you stop moving, your core temperature is going to begin dropping. And if you continue to have wet clothing on, this is going to cause further chilling. So one of the first things you should do to protect your core temperature is to get out of your wet, sweaty clothes, especially if you won't be taking a shower right away. I'm sure many of the people in our audience have had the uncomfortable experience of having uncontrollable shivering after a race due to dropping body temperature. And that is never a fun thing to do.
I remember you at the end of the Boston Marathon.
Yes, that was one of the things I was thinking about when I was going through my notes. It was, yeah, Boston Marathon 2015. It was wet and rainy during the race and kind of windy. And I had to end up waiting a long time in the finisher's area for you to come find me.
Well, let me tell you why that was.
No, I don't really care. All I will care was that my teeth were knocking together so hard. I am surprised I did not crack my teeth. Like my jaw was like sore later from all the shivering and clenching my jaws doing. I should have just been prepared and had a drop bag or clothes that I could have changed into, but that was rough. And then there was the New Jersey Marathon in 2016 where I underdressed for the conditions. It was windy, rainy, and I had barely functioning hands by the end of the race. They were so frozen up. And then, of course, to get out of my sweaty clothes or even untie my shoes was nearly impossible because I was so cold.
Mm. Always overdress. That's the lesson.
Always overdress. No. Always have a plan for some dry clothes. Get out of those sweaty clothes and into dry gear, especially if you can't shower right away. So having some dry clothes available post-race can be a lifesaver.
From a medical standpoint, then, if you don't bring your body temperature back up to normal, how does that hurt recovery exactly?
Well, you're going to be going into hypothermia. And so your body is going to start shunting blood away from your muscles into your core to keep those key organs, mm-hmm. Warm and healthy. Obviously, it goes to the areas of the most vital importance. And so if you don't have blood flow to your skeletal, major skeletal muscles, it's just going to cause, things to be more sluggish. Your body's not going to be clearing out the lactic acid.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You're just not going to have as good a circulation. You'll probably notice more swelling, more stiffness. So, yeah, okay. No fun.
Now, this assumes cold weather. Let's talk about really quick bringing your body temperature down. Let's say you're training in the summertime and you come back and you're just like overheating.
Yes. Another good thing can be to get out of those clothes because sometimes, how humidity tends to make you feel hotter?
Mm-hmm.
So getting out of those wet clothes can be helpful. If you can get into kind of a cool shower right away or even drinking cold water here in Southeast Missouri in the summer, there's been many a run that we come in the house and we're just like literally like dripping sweat on the floor. It's just drip, drip, drip.
Yep.
But usually if you come inside where the temperature is controlled, that's helpful. So if you're still outside, you need to get into some shade. You need to get some air movement around your body to help cool it, get some cold water or an electrolyte drink that you can consume right away to replace lost fluids and things like that.
Which brings us to the next thing we want to talk about, and that is refueling.
Yes, another way you can speed recovery is through refueling within approximately 30 minutes after a long or tough workout. The glycogen repletion window is actually open to convert carbs to glycogen at a higher rate for approximately 2 to 4 hours immediately following vigorous exercise. So in the past, I'm thinking back to long runs, I'd walk in the door and I would be often immediately bombarded with demands that have built up in my absence. With small kids, they tend to save all their issues for mom. And it was really hard to find time to eat something right away. So my perfect solution was a recovery drink. And I know a lot of runners do have favorite recovery drinks. There's a large variety in the market, but one that's really good is from Generation UCAN. It provides protein and carbs without simple sugars or a lot of calories. So it's not like, you're having like a milkshake full of calories. You're just getting a couple hundred calories in so your body can start replacing the glycogen. And then, obviously you can eat a more balanced meal when you have time, hopefully in the next couple of hours. I also really like the UCAN bars. They're very handy to eat when you can't have a proper meal right away.
A lot of people take UCAN before a run, but here you're saying that it works great as a recovery.
Well, they have the carbohydrate-only fuel that you can use before and during running, but then there's the version with the protein that can make a great recovery drink.
Yeah, and I seem to remember that is how Meb Kifleski, because he's been a big supporter of UCAN, but he says that he takes it immediately after his marathons.
Or probably any tough workout, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely, yeah. He's taking advantage of that glycogen repletion window and refueling. Now, obviously, if you're doing a light workout or a shorter run that doesn't get close to depleting your glycogen stores, then shoving extra carbs and calories in post-workout is only going to lead to fat gain. So you really want to make sure that you refuel wisely. If you go out and run 4 miles, you probably don't need a recovery drink because your body has way more reserves than that. And I've mentioned how you can, with protein, can be a great recovery fuel. But of course, Trevor and I have used Generation UCAN fuels for our long runs and races for many years, back since 2013, I think. And, we wouldn't think of doing an endurance event without it. So we're really thankful to have a fuel that keeps your blood sugar stable and delivers great results, doesn't cause any stomach upset. That's really the whole package. So if you're interested in checking out what Generation UCAN has to offer, go over to generationucan.com and use the promo code MTARECOVER.
because this is the recovery episode. So you can save 15% off if you use the code MTARECOVER, and we appreciate you, Can, being a friend and sponsor of this podcast. We'd also like to thank our other episode sponsor, a company called Whoop. That's W-H-O-O-P. You probably heard us talk about Whoop on our last episode when we talked about the importance of sleep and being able to track sleep. And I've been wearing this strap. It's extremely comfortable. You hardly know it's there. So we know that overtraining is a big problem. Overtraining syndrome is a leading cause of injury and burnout. And that's where our friends at Whoop come in. They have put together a system to monitor your recovery. It's actually developed by a Harvard scientist, and it's the first wearable fitness device to automatically measure physiological markers to determine your personal readiness to take on the strain of the next day.
That's right. It's so comfortable, like you mentioned, that you can wear it continuously. It's waterproof, and it actually has a modular charger, so you can wear it while it's charging, which is important because the ideal time to wear it is during your sleep. We know that sleep leads to a recovered body ready to take on the strain of training. So Whoop monitors each stage of sleep and will give you a percentage readout of how well your body has recovered after a night's rest. Whoop is worn by some of the best athletes in the world, 20-plus Olympians. We know that training harder doesn't always equal faster running, so use Whoop to prevent overtraining injuries that keep you out of the race. Visit whoop.com to learn more and use code MTA for $50 off your purchase.
That's whoop.com. And use the code MTA for $50 off. Well, number five is hydration.
We know that fluid makes up a huge part of your body weight, approximately 60%. So it's important to be mindful of staying hydrated. Now, many runners focus on staying hydrated during a run, but they neglect to drink water the rest of the day. And now I don't believe in forcing large amounts of fluids down, either during races or after races. In general, you should drink to thirst and let your body be your guide. But I do believe that many people don't think about drinking in the course of a day, you know, especially water.
Yeah.
You know, they get to the point where they're like extremely thirsty and like, oh, I'm just, you know, so thirsty, or I have a headache, which can be a sign of inadequate hydration. Or they notice they haven't urinated for a long time, or it's just a small amount, or it's dark colored. Those are all signs that you're not getting adequate hydration. Even nausea post-run. I was recently talking to a lady in my yoga class. She's training for her first marathon, and she's using the MTA beginner plan. And she was talking about this one long run. She just felt awful the rest of the day. And she was describing her symptoms. And I said, you know, how much water did you drink the rest of the day? She's like, oh, I don't like water. I might have had a Diet Coke.
Oh,
I'm like,
no.
That's all you had the rest of the day was a Diet Coke? I was like, okay, this is what's happening here.
It's amazing how many people I've met that don't like water.
Yeah. And, you know, so I was telling her, if you don't like the taste of water, then maybe put an electrolyte solution like you can hydrate, something that's not going to add calories, but it's going to add some taste and some electrolytes to your water, and just drink on that the rest of the day. Carry a water bottle around. I mean, I'm kind of fanatic about it. I don't go anywhere without a water bottle.
Yeah.
And I have a very high need to be drinking fluids, but, you know, it helps me feel healthy and energized.
I am that way too now because of you. I can't go anywhere without water.
Right.
I don't even know how I lived the first 20 years of my life. There are probably people listening to this that are getting thirsty right now.
I'm thirsty. I had to get a drink.
Yeah, I think it's easy to neglect.
It is. And I would say a lot of people probably are mildly dehydrated at some point during the day.
Hmm.
You know, obviously things like true dehydration is a very serious thing. And hyponatremia, where you're overhydrated and your body sodium drops, is also very serious. So you want to avoid extremes. I mean, I wouldn't walk around with a gallon jug of water and, you know, be just guzzling huge amounts of water, forcing it down. But, you know, I think probably in general, most people don't drink enough water, especially athletes.
Anytime my mouth is dry, I drink water. I don't think I drink as much as you, but I'm probably getting near my gallon a day. Every time I'm in the shower, I just open my mouth and just start guzzling. Straight from the faucet.
Okay.
Well, number six is compression, as in compression gear. This is a good little tool to use to help yourself recover.
Yeah, we recently posted a blog post about all the benefits of compression gear, and we talked about it as part of a quick tip on one of the episodes, and so we'll definitely link that on the blog so you can get the full rundown of the whys and the what's and the kind of compression gear that we like. But basically, compression gear can provide more oxygen, improve blood circulation, and help with muscle and joint stabilization. It improves the metabolism of lactic acid and helps speed recovery. The true benefits of compression garments are really proven in the post-race or the post-long run period when they stimulate circulation to give you a faster recovery rate. So, you know, if you like to wear them during a long run or a race, many people like the way they feel. I tend to like to wear them, especially in cooler weather. I think it really helps, you know, maybe just subjectively, but I feel like my muscles bounce back a lot faster if I'm wearing compression gear. But definitely the ideal time to put them on is during the recovery period. One mistake I do see people making with compression gear is not getting the correct size. With true compression gear, it will be a big effort to wrestle it on, and it will cling very tightly to your body. You know, I see people, like, they have, like, this baggy compression gear, and it's like, those are tights, you know, but it's not truly giving you the benefits of compression unless it is hugging your body very tightly. Now, you should still be able to breathe just fine. I'm not saying that, you know, you should be, like, gasping for air because it's so tight, but make sure that it is very snug, you know, like with my compression pants or compression socks. I mean, I nearly break a sweat putting them on.
Wow.
So, lock and load.
Thanks for the tip on that. And number seven is cold therapy, my least favorite.
Yes, many runners tend to think of the dreaded ice bath when it comes to cold therapy. And people have differing thoughts and emotions when it comes to ice baths. But cryotherapy or cold therapy constricts the blood vessels and reduces metabolic activity, which can reduce swelling and tissue breakdown. So submersing your lower body in cold water below 59 degrees Fahrenheit for 10 to 15 minutes in the recovery period can noticeably reduce muscle soreness in the next few days and reduce performance-related decreases from inflammation. So taking an ice bath or even sitting in a cold lake or stream within the first 2 hours post-run can be of great benefit. Now, if you can't handle the thought of submersing that much of your body in cold water and you have kind of a sore area, you know, a knee that's hurting, your ankle or something that's swelling, be sure to get an ice pack at least on that area right away. And ice the area for about 15 minutes every 2 hours for the first 24 hours to decrease swelling. And there's some places that will do cryotherapy where they have like these compression wraps where they put on your legs. And I think it like circulates, you know, ice cold water through these things. And so it's localized to the areas that you need. So it's not like the wet coldness, but you can do that. And it can be very beneficial too if that's something that you would like to look into or have extra money to spend on. So, Trevor, have you ever taken an ice bath before?
Yes. It's like worse than a marathon itself.
So you're saying you're an ice bath baby?
I might be an ice bath baby.
Ice bath baby. Ice bath baby. All right, stop. I got my ice cube pouring into the tub. This will not be boring. Family is gonna think I've lost it when I scream like I'm being accosted. Chillin' after running in suburbia. Ice bath gonna give me hypothermia. I'm so cold that I need some hot drinkage. Yes, I'm a guy, so I'm gonna have shrinkage. Shaking, the ice water's delivering. Hard to break dance when you're just shivering. Stay in till my circulation cuts off. I'm the fool who's freezing his ass off. Numbness from my hips to my toes. Got an icicle hanging from my nose. Pull out the switchblade, I'm concealing, stabbing my legs, I got no feeling. Ice bath baby. Ice bath baby. Ice bath baby. Ice bath baby. Now that my body is frozen from this torture I have chosen, time to exit this experience before I become delirious. I think it might be a little too late. Legs looking like a lobster dinner plate. And now I can't stop the shaking. My legs and feet are aching. Recovery is what they tell me. It's a theory they try to sell me. Y'all keep talking, I can't hear ya. I'm like a woolly mammoth in Siberia. Penguins in the Antarctic Sea. They ain't got nothing on me. Y'all got some legs I can borrow, 'cause I'm not sure I can run tomorrow. Ice bath baby. Yo, check it, whose crazy idea ice was this baby anyway? Ice bath, I think baby, I'm blacking out, yo. Ice bath, I need baby about 10 more layers of clothes here, yo.
Oh, that's more fun than we should be allowed to have on one podcast.
That's right.
And that song is by Resurrected Runner. You can check him out online. He does running parody songs, a lot of great stuff. Angie, you remember the old Vanilla Ice song, I'm sure.
Yes, of course.
Sure, you're...
The Parachute Pants.
Yeah. You were probably big into Vanilla Ice back in the day, huh?
I do admit I liked the song Ice Ice Baby.
You were probably more into, what are those guys called? Boys? Oh.
New Kids on the Block.
Yeah, that's it. New Kids on the Block. All the 90s.
Yes.
Wonderful time. And by way of review, we've talked about cooling down, stretching, getting your body temperature back to normal, refueling, hydration, compression, and cold therapy. Now, we actually have 7 more intentional things that you should do to help yourself recover, but we are out of time for this episode. So we're going to put that part 2, the second half of this, in the Academy for anybody that wants to find it in there. You can find out how to join the Academy when you visit marathontrainingacademy.com. But before we go, we'd like to answer a listener question. And this is going to be unique because it's actually a voicemail question from a listener in the UK named Matthew Stride. And he asked a great question about pacing for his first marathon and kind of estimating the finish time for his first marathon. Oh, and before I play it, I might add, it sounds like Matthew is actually out on a run, so there are some road noises and wind noises. Nevertheless, it's an important question, so we thought we'd feature it.
Hi, Angie. My name is Matthew. I'm from Birmingham in the United Kingdom. I'm actually running my first marathon 3 weeks on Sunday, the London Marathon. And the only question I have is, I've never ran a marathon before. I've ran a half marathon before, and I think the quickest half marathon I've done is 1 hour 43. I assume that I would want to do the marathon in less than 4 hours. That's my aim. And I know that to run 4 hour marathons, you need to be running 9 minutes, 9 seconds a mile. When I go out for runs at marathon pace, I try and run it at 9 minutes, but I feel like this is just too slow for me. Am I sort of underestimating myself, or is that the correct thing to do? You know, slower, better. Or should I be going maybe I should aim for 8 minute 30 second mile, perhaps. Any advice would be great. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Matthew, for the question. So, Angie, what do you think?
Well, congratulations on getting into the London Marathon, Matthew. That's being very exciting and be a great place to run your first marathon for sure. And it sounds like your training's going really well.
Yeah.
So keep up the great work with that. And I think this is a very common question that people have. It's hard to know how to estimate what the time of your first marathon is going to be and how to pace yourself. So I typically recommend, I'm sure people have heard on the podcast before, that your first marathon should be all about crossing the finish line strong and healthy and happy, hopefully.
Yeah.
And so the first marathon should not be about, you know, pushing your body to its max and trying to come in at the fastest possible time. Now, with that said, if you are able to comfortably do your long runs at a 9 minute per mile pace, I think that's probably a good indication that you should be able to finish the marathon less than 4 hours. However, those last 6 miles, 6.2 miles, the last 10K of the marathon can be a bit challenging, and you never know what's going to happen. So I would encourage you to start out conservatively. You know, even though that 9 minute mile is going to feel easy for the first at least half of the race, I would really encourage you to stick very close to that and not get caught up in the people who are passing you or the people who are faster than you. Because realize that if you use smart pacing, that you're going to be passing many of those people who are struggling.
Oh, for sure.
You know, especially in the last 5K. I mean, there's a lot of carnage at that point in a marathon.
If you were to stay on a 9 minute per mile pace and consistently all the way to the end, you're going to be passed by people in the beginning like crazy because they're all excited and going out too strong. But you're going to pick these people off. Some of them are going to be roadkill on the side of the course, unfortunately. And you will be, if you just stay on that 9 minute mile pace, you'll be passing people like crazy.
And I will say that if you still feel great at mile 20 and you feel like you have more left in the tank, feel free to drop your pace down to, you know, like an 8:45 pace. You know, if you get to mile 23 and you're still feeling good, then, you know, continue to drop your pace down, and that will ensure that you have a strong finish instead of limping across the finish line feeling like you just did the hardest thing in your life. So, yeah, I would really encourage you to, you know, pace yourself smart And it's hard mentally for sure, but those first few miles of a marathon should feel relatively easy.
Yeah.
And then if you feel good after mile 20, then feel free to drop the hammer and finish strong. And I guarantee it feels great to be passing people in the last few miles rather than having herds of people run around you.
Yeah, definitely don't want you to burn out all your energy before you get to mile 20.
And the great thing is if you finish the marathon feeling like, you know, you still have a little bit of energy in the tank, the great thing is that if you choose to do another marathon, you can train for a PR and it'll give you something really exciting to look forward to.
All right. So we hope that helps a lot of you out there because this is actually a question that we get quite often. And it's really easy for a new marathoner to just kind of question these things and wonder about these things. So great question. Hope it was a help to all of you out there too. That brings us to the end of this episode, the recovery episode. Remember, you can get the full training, all of the 14 things that you should do to recover like a boss inside the Academy for members. Just go to marathontrainingacademy.com/recovery to get that. Thanks, folks, for being a listener. We appreciate all of you. Remember, you do have what it takes to recover well, to run a marathon, and to change your life. Well on my way, well on my way. I might be a nice bath baby.